entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, we will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building great self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, as I'm sure many of you expect to hear Marvin's voice with me this morning, he is doing great things working with the charter schools and really helping to improve the public school system. And so I am so thankful that he's doing that. And I know that he wants to be on, and we talk each weekend. And he looks forward to being back on the air and being able to interact with all of you listeners. Now, our topic today is gifts of gratitude. And personally, I just want to share that I am very grateful. I am grateful for my family, my friends, and really the many blessings that have been bestowed on me. And I try whenever I can to share that information. But sometimes I find that, you know, the people that I am most grateful for, I may not be sharing it directly with them. So I may be out there telling a big audience, but then, you know, be at home and not share it as much as I probably should. And so for that part, I'm sorry. And for those that listening that know that I do appreciate you so very much, and I am so grateful to have all of you in my life. I'm also very grateful to have our special guest today. Our special guest is an award-winning writer and filmmaker. Her name is Elizabeth Galen Baker, and she worked on 11 independent films in Los Angeles before writing and directing her first documentary, which was entitled When Buffalo Roam. And it won the Best Social Documentary Short at the New York International Independent Film and Video Festival. Now, her next project was a feature-length documentary called The Trail of Painted Ponies, and it was narrated by Ally McGraw. This film won Best Documentary at the White Sands Film Festival of 2005, while Baker herself won Best Female Director. In 2002, she worked closely with the New Mexico governor, Gary Johnson, and recruited stars such as Shirley MacLaine, Val Kilmer, Marsha Mason, and various members of the New Mexico House and Senate to pass, at that time, something that was groundbreaking film legislation. It was the historical beginning of New Mexico's now vital film industry. Last year, Elizabeth published Gifts of Gratitude, which is a series of inspired stories that have impacted her life. And she also produced We Know Not What We Do, a documentary on climate change that has garnered many awards around the world. So joining us, and someone I'm very grateful to have on, Elizabeth, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Alan, what a wonderful introduction. Thank you very much. And just so that we don't intimidate people, I want you to know that I did not write the book and make the movie at the same time. I wrote the book first, and then I got hired to make We Know Not What We Do. And both of them have been experiences that have been life-changing for me.
Well, one of the things that I like about the book is that I think if people will take the time to read it, it will be life-changing for them as well. So I appreciate you sharing how it's changed your life. But to me, one of the greatest things that we can do is to put something out there that if people take the time to read it, it's going to change their life as well. So again, thank you. Thank you for that.
I was I was so thrilled because two mornings ago, I woke up to find a Facebook message that said, "You signed a copy of this book for me some time ago. I woke up and couldn't sleep at 2 o'clock in the morning and read till 4:30. I am so inspired. Thank you so much." And I thought, that's why you do it. That, you know, that she said, can I possibly connect with you? And I wrote back and said, well, you just did.
Absolutely. That is beautiful.
Yeah.
So now before we talk about the book, I'd love to learn more about you. I mean, because now from what I have learned, you've had a wonderful life. It's been full of many chapters. You've been a housewife, a mother, a storyteller, a filmmaker, an author. So what inspired you and what compels you to keep taking on new challenges?
You know, that's a very good question, and I hope I can answer it in a succinct way that people will understand. That's really what the book is about. It's about surrendering to the magic of life and allowing yourself to take on new challenges, allowing life to use you. You know, we get so caught up in security and all of these things that we have been taught, I think erroneously, are the most important things. And I was somebody that, for some reason or another, I can't explain why. I think it's because maybe my dad suddenly dropped dead when I was 5 years old. And I think that so impressed me about how quickly we can be out of here. And, and I just allowed life to take me. And that's what the book is really about. Here's a sentence from the first page. Some people call this force. This book is about my joy in discovering a force so big that it has influenced the course of my life in mysterious and even supernatural ways. Some people call this force God. Some call it spirit. Some call it the all. Some call it the I am. There's probably thousands of other names. What you call it is not important. It's what you do with this energy and allow it to do with you that counts. That's from the very first page of the book.
That's beautiful. And you know, while you were reading that, one of the things that I was thinking about, there may be a lot of people out there that have just, you know, as they're listening and they're thinking, you know, I just don't know how I could do all of that. So first, let me ask you, because I think I know the answer. How many people told you when you said that you were going to start doing all of these things, when you decided to go from housewife and mother to storyteller, filmmaker, and author, how many people told you, you can't do that?
Everybody, of course, because not only that, but I was a single mom, and I had two teenage boys. And, you know, I look at that period of my life, it's just a blur. I had them in private schools. I got them, you know, great educations. Being a mother has been the biggest thrill of my life and the most creative thrill of my life. And no one thought I could do it. And it's interesting because that's the way we've been taught. But I am convinced that we have been taught erroneously that you can do anything, that you're here to do anything, that life is a wonderful adventure, and that one of the great gifts of living that kind of life is gratitude. I can tell you, Alan, that no one is more surprised than I am about the fact that I've made movies, that I've written a book, that I'm a speaker, that I do these things. No one is more surprised than me.
But the beauty of it is, and again, as I said, for anybody that's driving out there, that's thinking about that, you know, the message that I want them to get from that is that you had lots and lots of people that told you, no, you can't do that. Of course you can't do that. You can't just go write a book. You can't just go make a movie. You can't just go do all of these things. You can't go write a movie. You can't direct a movie. All of these things, and you did it anyway. So for those of you listening out there, when you have that dream, when you have that thing that you want to do, and somebody says, no, of course, you can't just go do that. Yes, you can. And this is proof right here.
Well, it's wonderful. I just saw a sign the other day that said, will those of you who are saying it's impossible, please be quiet while this person does. Does it, you know? It's like my advice to you, to those of you who are listening to us, is don't even tell anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, don't walk around sharing your dreams with people with negative energy, because what I've learned is that everybody on this planet is in a different energy, is in a different dimension. Some people are in a very negative place. They're going to think that you can't do any of the things that you dream about doing. Don't talk to them about it, because it's not their fault. They're just stuck in a negative spot, but you don't need that negativity. So choose wisely who you even share your dreams with.
That's a great point. And I think to take it a step further is that some say that sharing it adds a level of anxiety. If you feel like you need that level of anxiety to keep you moving forward, then there's nothing wrong with it. But if you feel like that is something that is going to make it more difficult, or as you said, or the negative influences are going to keep beating you down, I agree with you. Just don't share it. Just let them look and go, wow, how'd you do that?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I didn't self-publish the book, and I didn't get one rejection slip. I just sat down and wrote two chapters and sent it off to a publisher that I knew slightly. I mean, I had never met them in person. I had exchanged a couple of emails with them when I was on a different tack altogether. Mm-hmm. And they immediately sent back and said, sit down and write it, we'll take it. It's like no one ever heard of that. Everybody's used to getting 300 rejection slips.
Right.
And I think it's because that energy, if that energy is with you, you cannot fail.
Yep.
That's just the truth of it.
I absolutely love it. Yep. So now, was there a defining or pivotal point that you made this shift? Because you said it surprised, at times you're as surprised as anybody. So what was that defining or pivotal point in your life to where that light went on and you went, I can do all these things?
It never went on, and I never thought that. I simply, I really didn't. It mm-hmm. never even occurred to me that I could do it, because I was a performer in New York. I did what I didn't think I would do, which was marry and settle down into a family and give birth to children. I didn't think I was going to do that because I wanted to conquer the New York stage. And it took me succeeding at that to realize that that wasn't what I was looking for. So instead of going on with it, I did off-Broadway, I modeled, I did national television in New York for 3 years, and somehow had the wisdom, I have no idea how, but somehow had the wisdom to know that even if I conquered it further, it was not going to feed the desire in my heart for love. Mm-hmm. So I then turned around, I turned that path entirely and followed the path towards love and married a man that I had met in the theater in New York, who was at that time stationed in Europe. And I was married for 17 years. And of course, my joke is that I wasn't great at marriage, but I was just amazing at motherhood. And I had natural childbirth, which is another story in the book, and it changed my whole perception, because for the first time in my life, it propelled me into unconditional love. Mm-hmm. And that somehow made me realize that is what this life is about. It's about unconditional love. It's not about climbing the ladder to success. It's not about proving that you're better than the next person. It's about unconditional love, community. It's about loving the earth as you would yourself or a child. It's about things that we aren't taught. And mm-hmm. that then, when I came out of being a single mom and doing all kinds of crazy odd jobs, because, you know, I didn't have a career. So suddenly my boys were off at college. I found myself in Los Angeles, and I thought, how interesting. I'm in Los Angeles. I've always wanted to work on films. Let's see if I can do that. It was just a natural next step, and it took me 3 years. And my joke is that finally my hairdresser's ex-lover's wife came to L.A. to work on a little independent film and was kind enough to hire me. And I can't remember if it was $50 a day or $50 a week. But I had always wanted to make films, and so I followed that passion. I was terrified. I thought, what if I get on a film set and I hate it? But, oh no, I was deeply in love, and within 2 weeks, I started as a production assistant, mm-hmm. assistant, which is the lowest.
The PA.
And within 2 weeks, I had become assistant to the director, and on the next film, I was unit production manager. Unheard of.
We really have to talk after this. You and I have a very similar path in that area. Now, you know, as I we have questions that get sent in, and again, I want to thank the listeners that not only take the time to listen, but to then send in a question. And again, if you send in a question, we will always try to get to it. I've had a few people that have told me that the reason they do it is because they subscribe through iTunes and then they listen to it later on at night. So that's great. This one is a comment, and this comes in and it says, 2 years ago, we had a job fair for our 11th and 12th grade classes. One of the guest presenters asked each student to write down three things that they were genuinely grateful for. At the end of the day, several of the papers were read anonymously to the entire group. It was shocking the depth of expression and love that came from some of these young people. Everyone present was deeply moved. Since that day, we have included this practice in our bi-monthly assemblies, and it has made an amazing difference in the overall environment, openness, and interaction among our students and teaching staff. It is wonderful to see books on this topic, and I look forward to reading yours very soon.
Oh, how wonderful. What a lovely comment. Wow.
Yeah, and what I like about it is it goes right to the point of talking to the kids, getting them to start to deal with this at an early age. I think that to be able to focus on how grateful we are at an earlier age is going to help them throughout their life. So again, as they say, having books like yours that we can have our young people start reading, I think it will really help them to recognize just all the great gifts that we are given.
You know, I love to be booked as a speaker, and I found myself being booked as a speaker for kids in juvenile hall,
mm-hmm.
kids in, who have been, are being restrained because they have problems. First of all, we have a very problematic society right now. We have a society that is so based on greed that it has to be horribly confusing to kids. And I had more fun and was touched so deeply by being able a couple of years ago to really interact a great deal with kids and have them ask me these kinds of questions and then have them say, oh, I wrote a poem, would you like to hear it? And have them send it on email. I mean, it's our most important work. There's just no question about it. Children are amazing.
Yeah, and I could not agree more. And, you know, and I think most of our listeners know that with one of my companies, we work with at-risk kids. So, you know, for you to be able to speak to that group in particular, I think is so beneficial. I think they are going to take away something that is so beneficial to their life that, and again, that's where we should be focusing on. We should be focusing on how can we help them to appreciate all of the good things, and then they're not focused so much on whatever it is, you know, that they don't have, if it's the latest, greatest, you know, phone or gadget or whatever. It's amazing. I'll tell a quick story, but, you know, I worked a case, and again, without using any names, but I worked a case where we needed to locate a runaway girl. And she had run away because she had gotten a Mustang convertible for her 16th birthday.
Oh, my God.
And she ran away because her brother, that was 2 years older, had gotten a BMW convertible on his birthday. And so she trashed the Mustang and ran away. And I had to locate her and ended up locating her where she went to her father's medical office and was trashing it and was trashing that also because she was so miserable that she only got a Mustang and didn't get a BMW. Now talk about ungrateful.
Well, and talk about how turned around our society has gotten. We have lost it. In my humble opinion, that we are stuffing our kids full of gadgets and phones and cars and whatnot, and we have lost the thread of heart from our heart to our children, and we must restore that. You know, I hope that out of this interview that we're doing, Alan, that somehow you can bring me in to work with at-risk children because I love doing that. And I almost cried once when I was in a juvenile hall and one of the boys leaned over and said, have you ever heard of Wayne Dyer? And I almost cried. I just said, wow. He said, you know, I'm at such odds with my family because I listen to that. And I'm wondering what's really happening to us. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, the family should be in here, not you. And at one point, they actually allowed me to take two boxes of books. And I thought, these kids are going to laugh at me. They're not going to care whether I sign a book for them, and they lined up in a long line. It took almost an hour to sign all of those books and give them to those kids, and they acted like they were so grateful that I had come in there with gifts of gratitude and that I had signed each one especially for them. Just blew my mind.
Okay, you just answered the question that came up from the very beginning as to why when you were on Broadway and you were very successful there, but why it was not what you felt you were meant to do, and now I see the answer. That's what you were meant to do. And the difference that you have probably made in those kids' lives, that all of those kids to be able to read that and then go back, it's shocking to me when you bring up the fact of a family that would not want their child to listen to Wayne Dyer. And it's also interesting that you just that story came up right now, because he just passed away a little over a week ago.
I know, we just lost him, didn't we?
I know. Yeah. I know. And he's truly one of the great thinkers of you know the last 100 years. So
it's interesting because Hay House sent out a link so that you could watch the shift, and I was very humbled with the fact that his movie, The Shift, was exactly the same message as my newest movie, We Know Not What We Do. Let me read you the log line from that.
Please do.
We Know Not What We Do is an inspirational and creative call for a moral and spiritual shift in our thinking as to how we humans live on planet Earth or face extinction.
Wow. Yeah, it is very similar. Now, on that note, we're going to take a break. And for everybody else out there, please, if you'd like to, if you are on your computer, if you want to open up another screen, you can go to Elizabeth's website and you can kind of follow along with us. And you can go to BakerTrueStories.com.
Alan, it's changed.
It's changed. Go ahead. Give it.
It's www.giftsofgratitude.net.
Okay. So if you got that, www.giftsofgratitude.net. And again, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in a little over a minute. Please stay with us as we continue to talk about gifts of gratitude.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And our guest today is Elizabeth Galen Baker. The topic is gifts of gratitude. We are having a great time just talking about not only the gratitude that we have in our own lives, but the ways in which we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. So, you know, along those lines, Elizabeth, can you share a few of your favorite stories from your book?
Well, yes, I'm happy to. They're like children, you know. They're all kind of my favorite. But here's one in particular, and I love it, and I always get such a kick out of it. It's called I Kiss Your Knees. And it's the story of me going to Agape. I lived in L.A. for years, and me going to Agape, and it was the end of the service, and all the children came out and stood on the stage, and no one noticed. Everyone was singing, and, you know, energy was high, and no one noticed a little blonde boy that wandered off the stage and started walking into the audience to find his family. And it was only after he had taken several steps that he realized his mistake, and he had no idea where his father and mother were, and he looked terrified, but he was too brave to turn back. And he caught my eye, and I held his eyes just like I would his hand as he bravely walked down the... There were about 500 people in this huge room, and mm-hmm. he bravely walked down one of the aisles, and miraculously, the way life is, his mom and dad were sitting, who I did not know, were sitting about two rows in front of me, and I got him all the way to the row, and then he saw them and flashed a smile and went in to his mom and dad, who were very surprised to see him. They thought he was still up on the stage. Afterwards, Agape at that time didn't have a real space, and it was being held at a hotel. And way across the gardens, I saw this little boy and his mother headed towards their car. And more importantly, he saw me. And he dropped his mother's hand, and he started walking rapidly in my direction. And to her credit, she did not make him come back or stop him. She followed him, and he got all the way up. It was quite a ways to get to me. And he looked up at me with those precious blue eyes, and he lifted my skirt, and he said, "I kiss your knees." And he did. And then he dropped my skirt and turned back, took his mother's hand, and went home.
Wow. Well, again, it all comes down to making a positive difference, and how we do it, either by showing our gratitude or, in that case, just showing him that you're with him. You're right there with him. He knew that he wasn't lost anymore because he locked eyeballs with you.
That's so right. And I would not look away.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about the documentary. And because although I've had a chance to read the book, I have not had a chance to see the documentary. So, and again, for those that didn't hear earlier, you know, last year you produced, you know, a compelling documentary, which is called, you know, We Know Not What We Do. Now, you know, you traveled to Alaska, you interviewed Eskimos, and you traveled to many other places. But what was the guiding impetus that got you involved in that film?
Well, first of all, I got hired to do it by a couple in Albuquerque who could afford to make a documentary film, Aaron Daniel Taylor and his wife, and they wanted to make a film on climate change. And I almost didn't take the job because the truth was that in my mind I was thinking, what do I know about climate change? And but then I love making movies, and I didn't know anything about the slaughter of the buffalo at Yellowstone National Park before I began that job. So I bravely took it and immediately started getting the what I was supposed to say in this film. The film really told me. The film really gave itself to me, and all I did was have the courage to make it. And I can tell you right now, Alan, that it took great courage to make it because it's a love letter to human beings. It's not an exposé. It's not angry. It's speaking through poetry. It's speaking through music. It's speaking through some of the most amazing interviews I've ever done, had the privilege to do in my life, like with Colleen Swan in Kivalina. I know the president Obama just went up to Alaska, and Kivalina was one of the communities that he mentioned because it's being washed away by the ocean because the ice is melting and all of their way of life is being washed away with the ice, and the ocean is rising, and they're right on the tip of that ocean. Colleen Swan sat with me for an hour and a half, and she was so upset when she first sat down that she got up and walked towards the door and said, you know, I really can't do this interview. And of course, we had taken 4 planes to even get there.
Wow.
And I opened my mouth, and I have no idea what Spirit said, but Spirit said something that stopped her in her tracks. She turned around and she looked at me, and she came back and sat down, and I said, now I'm going to be quiet, and will you please tell us the story? And it was one of the most amazing interviews I've ever done, and I was crying at the end of it, and so was she, and we hugged. And this is the kind of thing that took place all around the country. Richard Sychek, who is the president of the New Evangelical Partnership for Common Good, Steve Anderson, who is a retired brigadier general, Stephen Evans, who is one of the smartest men I've ever met, Fukushima, all of what's happening in Appalachia with the explosion of the mountains, all of this is in the film. And the elder brothers from high in the Andes, with what they're saying about, we're so on the tipping point of killing our planet, which is a living thing. Mary Piper, who's a New York best-selling author of The Green Boat. All of these people actually sat with me and told me their version, and then Spirit told me how to weave this together with poetry and music, and the whole message of the film is the shift, that we need to shift our thinking morally and spiritually about the way we're living on the planet. And I thought, even while I was making it, I thought, everybody's just going to laugh at me. But, you know, you're making a film a year and a half before it's actually out there, and now it's out there, and it came out the same week that the Pope wrote a 72-page letter to humanity about this shifting our thinking, and it also came out the week that George Clooney's Tomorrowland, which has exactly the same message in it, a beautiful feature film, and I laughed and I cried. I thought, what if I hadn't had the courage to make this film exactly the way that Spirit was telling me to make it, I would have totally missed the boat.
Yeah, which goes right back to what I was saying earlier. These are the things that you were meant to do. This is how you are making a difference, and I'm very thankful of it.
I'll tell you, it was a big thrill, and let me tell you what I've done. I sold my Mazda, and I paid cash for a 2007 Prius, and I moved out of Santa Fe, New Mexico, out of a townhouse there into the up on the hills in the forest of Cedar Crest, which is not far from Santa Fe and not far from Albuquerque, but up in the trees. I really learned a little bit about, I woke up and I thought, what am I doing? I don't have to live in a city. I don't have a 9-to-5 job. I write, I make films. I can just go and find a place in a calmer place. And I did.
Yeah. Now, I mean, if you can share with us, again, from that documentary, share with us some of the important climate change facts that we all need to know, and how dire is the situation?
The situation is so much more dire than anyone is admitting. It is. We're right on the edge of extinction. You know, when they say we're entering the sixth great thing of extinction, it's us that are really at danger. Yes, the polar bears, yes, the elephants, because we have such a crazy thought. And actually, it's exactly the same theme as when buffalo roam, because man is so full of himself and his ego and his cell phones and his, you know, iPads and all of this. All of those things are wonderful, but somehow we think we're really important. We're the smallest and newest person, you know, species on this planet. And unfortunately, there are two different laws. There's spiritual law and there's government law. And we have been thinking that the golden calf was the only important thing. How much money do you have in the bank? How much security do you have? Blah, blah, blah. Well, first of all, folks, everyone who's listening, just get clear on this. There is no such thing as security. Because 1 minute without oxygen and you're out of here. Uh-huh. So getting that clear, you know, for heaven's sakes, we're digging and digging and digging into the planet. We're blowing up 500 mountains. When I was there, and that's a year ago, so maybe more now, but we've blown up 500 of our oldest mountains in Appalachia for 18 inches of coal. Children are dying there because the water now is so polluted with the dust that had come out of these mountains that children are being born deformed and they're dying. Kivalina is washing away. They can't hunt anymore. The caribou has changed their route. The seals are bleeding from their eyes. Fujishima happened in 2011. Nothing has been done to clean that up. We've got a recent storm that washed thousands and thousands and thousands of more gallons of radioactive waste into the ocean. The ocean has been absorbing all of our H2O and is really warm now. Beaches where you could not swim before in California, and I was recently out there and experienced it, are now warm because the ocean has been our friend and has been absorbing H2O, but now it's getting so acidic that it's killing coral reefs that have been alive for thousands of years. You know, I can only turn to the Beatles song, "Wake Up All Day Long," wake up singing songs. Please, we are killing the planet that we live on because we think that money in the bank is more important than human life, than our life, than being able to breathe. It's a really dire situation. And it's not being reported accurately.
Well, now, where can people see the film?
Well, they can't see it yet. They can go to www.weknownotwhatwedo.net and they can see two trailers. Okay. And they can see excerpts from some of these wonderful interviews. Right now, it's entered in an important film festival. Everybody do your Sundance dance. Uh-huh. It's entered in an important film festival that we're hoping if it gets in there, then it's going to be released and everybody will be able to see it. And regardless of whether it does or not, you will be able to see it. You will be able to buy the DVDs and all of that by next year, 2016. I really hurried to finish this film because the situation is so dire. It's already been booked to be shown on Earth Day next year at the Albuquerque Film and music experience. And I'm sure that it's going to be at various film festivals across the country, and hopefully somebody on television will pick it up. Somebody will make it possible to release it theatrically, at least on a limited basis. I'm trying to, in every way I know, you know, I'd love to get it to Oprah. I'm trying. I had a dream that I got it to Oprah and that she sent out a DVD to everyone on her mailing list. I'm hoping that, you know, I said, okay, Spirit, I'm going to have courage enough to make this movie, but I'm going to leave getting it out there up to you. And so we will see what happens with it. But everyone who has seen it is so touched, and so it really makes people think about what we're doing. Leonard Crowdog, believe it or not, Alan, Leonard Crowdog actually got in touch with me and said, I will give you a message for the film, and the film ends with him saying some of the most profound, beautiful lines about how we're guardians, that we don't dominate this planet, we are guardians of this planet, and it's all very sacred and holy and beautiful. What a beautiful man. I couldn't believe it. You know, I'm just a white chick, and Native Americans are very prone not to give talks on or interviews on video, but he got in touch with me and said, I'll give you a statement for the film.
That's great. It seems like what we're going to need to do is to figure out a way to now merge the two things. We need to have people to understand that we need to be more grateful. If we're more grateful for what the planet is giving us, maybe we will treat it better.
Right.
Now we're almost out of time. The time has flown by. We have a couple more questions that have come up. This one was an instant message question sent in. This one reads, it is very hard to be ungrateful when you work with disabled children and seniors. My heart is so full each and every time I am with them. I am seeing small pockets within different communities that are re-energizing these connections. But my question is, will this be enough to counteract society's spiraling self-absorption and the resulting conditions of depression and illness?
You know, I think it is, and here's why. There's so much more of us. Mary Piper said it first. We need to just be all connected, those of us who are the antibodies for the planet. We need to be connected, and there's so much more of this good stuff going on than most people realize. Just do all the good you can do and try to get connected. Try to work with or close to people, because we're prone to despair when we're alone. But listen, there is only one power, and that is the power for good, and the power for good never loses. We're going to win this thing, and it may not look like it now, but mark my words, if I'm not even still around when it happens, the good always prevails.
That's beautiful, and I feel the same way. And I was just talking to somebody recently that was kind of airing a lot of doom and gloom, and I said, you need to meet my two sons. And I said, when I sit down and I talk with them, and at 21 and 19 right now, one of which just left, went off to college, the fact that they are so bright and they are so caring, and that they see this, you know, there are bright people within the next generation that are going to fix some of these things that we maybe didn't handle so well. So let me add another quick question. Well, we got just a little bit of time. This one also came in via email. It says, living in a time in which those of us living in an industrialized country should be incredibly grateful. Why do you think people seem less grateful and less hopeful?
Well, I think it's because they don't realize what they have, you know, And I think that, again, that's changing. We have gotten lost in technology and iPhones and iPads and all of that stuff. And we have, you know, we have lost touch with the trees. The trees stand there to remind us of the incredible gift. We have wind turbines. We have the sun. We have the ocean. All of this is renewable energy that can take care of us and take care of everyone on the planet. We're just a little lost right now, but the fun thing about being lost is finding your way back, and we are finding our way back to the light at this time.
All right, before we go, from your travels, life choices, and adventures, what is the one thing that you would like to leave behind as your legacy?
Love. Love is everything.
That says it all. Everybody, you know, I thank you so much for those of you that have chosen to listen. Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming on. I am very grateful to that. Again, everybody out there, if you weren't able to take down the websites that we discussed, go to our website, Answers, the numeral for the family. Go to our website. All of Elizabeth's information will be there. If you are on Facebook or Twitter, please like us on that so that we can continue to put this word out to as many people as possible. Thank you. Be good humans and be with us again next week. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith right here on LA Talk Radio.